Good evening, manga fans. Ed Chavez. Volume 139 of the manga cast. This is a very special edition. We are live in New York. Just coming back from the IC V2 Graphic Novel Conference at New York Comic Con today. As you will hear a little later, I got there a little late. There were some delays I really couldn't do anything about in Chicago, and rushed out to New York as fast as I could get, considering that the airports are pretty far out there. So I ended up missing the first two panels, the graphic novels, the new literature, and the graphic novel growth and diversification panel. But I was able to get to two panels that were very critical to manga. The third panel of the day, which is anime and manga looking forward, and that's what we're going to be discussing. This is what you're going to be hearing in a few minutes. This is a panel basically with the top players in anime and manga, and they're going to be talking a bit about what they see in regards to the market and where it's going to be heading over the next 12 to 18 months or so. Talk a little bit about what they saw in the last year. Talk a little bit about OEL. Talk a little bit about even OEL in regards to anime, if you want to think about that, and how collaborations, cooperations are being done a lot in regards to production and getting funds for anime titles as well. So who you're going to be hearing is Milton Gripp of ICV2. He is the founder and president of ICV2. Possibly check out their website in regards to getting information about comics and manga and anime and the like. The other members on the panel, Milton is actually the moderator. The other members of the panel are as follows. Mike Bailiff, he's a senior vice president of ADV Films. He hardly actually talks in this panel, but you do get a few comments from him. Liz Coppola, vice president of Viz Media. Al Kahn, he is the CEO of 4Kids Entertainment. He has a real lot of good thoughts, some positive, some negative, especially in regards to manga. So keep an ear out for him. Mike Kylie from Tokyopop. He is one of the publishers there. Dallas Middaw, director of manga from Delray Books. John O'Donnell, CEO of Central Park Media. And finally, Tomoko Suga. She is a manager in regards to the foreign rights department of Kodansha in Japan. A lot of interesting things that they cover in this panel. They actually go a little long because manga has been relatively pretty successful, especially in regards to graphic novels over the last 2 years. You'll hear a little bit more about that in the next panel. But you have to keep in mind that as all these panelists will mention, this is still a small percentage of overall publishing here in this market. In Japan, it's much larger. Still, it's a very exciting, very much still a growing, developing market. So there are plenty of ways to go in regards to how to expand and how to really make this much more mature in this part of the world. You'll be hearing varying opinions in regards to how to do so and if that's even possible. So if you have any questions, you have any comments, please leave them here at the forum at the manga cast. If not, you can also send email to us. Let us know what you think about what these guys are saying. And then also at the same time, if you have any thoughts about the audio quality, I know it's kind of it might not be at its best because I unfortunately came in right as this thing was starting, so I wasn't able to set up properly. But if you have any opinions, any thoughts, let us know as well. You can send us an email at mangacasts@gmail.com. So without further ado, You'll hear me talk a little bit about my foibles today, and we'll just go right into the audio for today's panel.
Manga yet. And got Dallas and Miss Coppola, a few other people at the front.
As I said, we're going to get started. We're going to talk about anime and manga. Manga is the fastest growing category of graphic novels. It has been a huge part of the growth of the demographics of the graphic novel consumer. Anime has been a big part of that because anime on television and in theaters and on DVD and before that on VHS helped to broaden the awareness of Japanese pop culture and helped give the otaku community a medium to rally around. It's a substantial part of kids' programming. It dominates the 18 to 34 demographic in places like Cartoon Network and Adult Swim. And so today we wanted to talk about this phenomenon and talk about what it's all about and, more importantly, where it's going. And for that purpose, we've assembled an all-star group of panelists to discuss both anime and manga as they relate to this overall phenomenon. Working from the left, we have Mike Bailiff, who's the Senior Vice President of ADV Films. Been with ADV since 2001 and became Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing in November of 2004. Has 20 years of experience in various industries that led up to this point in the anime and manga field. Next is John O'Donnell, who's the CEO of Central Park Media. He co-founded Central Park Media, which was founded in 1990. I was the first anime company to achieve mass market distribution of anime and popularize the genre among leading retailers. CPM was also the first, one of the first companies to publish English language translation of Japanese manga and Korean manhwa, a field in which it continues to be active today. Tomoko Suga is the senior manager of the Foreign Rights Department of Kodansha. She currently oversees a team of licensing managers that handle manga publishing rights at Kodansha. She started working on manga licensing toward Europe and the United States in 2001 and came out of the editorial side at Kodansha, working mainly on acquisition of books from outside Japan before that. To my right here is Mike Kiley, who's the publisher of Tokyopop. Mike's been at Tokyopop since 1998, joined to help found its internet business. His career has evolved at Tokyopop and was appointed publisher in the last year or two. Prior to joining that, Mike came from the bookselling world and was a bookseller for the University of California at Irvine. Launched the first academic bookstore in cyberspace in 1992, and I had an online store, early online store, selling anime and manga-related products. Next we have Lisa Coppola from Viz. She's the vice president at Viz Media. She's been in Viz since 2002 and now has responsibility for all sales and marketing of books and home video products. Prior to Viz, Lisa was in managerial roles at the Walt Disney Company and as VP of marketing at GS Entertainment Group, which was also where she also managed marketing and media properties. A 20-year veteran of the publishing and entertainment industry. Also spent time at UC Press, Random House, and other. Next, we have Dallas Middon, who's the director of manga at Delray Books. Started his publishing career at Prima Games, joined Viz Media in 2000, was sales and marketing director through the beginning of the American manga explosion in the early part of this decade. He began working for Random House as the director of the Delray Manga Program in 2003 and managed the company's highly successful launch in 2004. Next we have Al Kahn, who's the CEO of 4Kids Entertainment. Kahn has been active in intellectual property licensing and management for many years. He was involved with Cabbage Patch Kids in the 80s, Pokemon in the 90s, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Today, so he's really an all-star record of intellectual property management. In 2005, he was inducted into Lima's Murray Altshuler Licensing Hall of Fame. And the first question I want to ask this group is really a short-term question. We're going to talk about the long-term trends. But what I'd like to do is talk about what people have seen in the last year to 18 months in terms of trends in the marketplace for anime and manga and intellectual property. Why don't we just start down at the end with Alcon.
Thank you. Can anybody hear me? Perfect. Good. Thank you for having me. Really enjoy this. I actually have to tell you, I think that the trend line for anime is one of success breeds imitation. And I think what we're seeing is that a lot of companies, both in the Asian market and also in the United States market, are trying to replicate the look and feel of the anime experience because of the success that it's garnered. In Japan right now, we think there's probably a lack of good anime to bring over at this point in time, that a lot of the titles that were so popular in Japanese culture, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, One Piece, Naruto, those have all been brought over. And right now, the things we're seeing in Japan aren't necessarily as successful as the ones that preceded it. Right now, we think the big trend for us is girls, that most of the anime that had taken place in Japan, I'm talking strictly now, not from an 18 to 35-year-old position, but from a kid position. The most popular anime in history out of Japan was certainly probably three titles, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh!, and One Piece. In girls, there were also a couple of titles that have been very, very successful. Certainly Sailor Moon, certainly Magical Doremi, and of course, Pretty Cure right now is probably the number one selling girls manga in Japan. We are lucky enough to represent all of those properties, and we will be bringing Pretty Cure and Doremi into the States. Doremi is on television now, and Pretty Cure will be coming in September.
Dallas?
Well, obviously, I can really only speak to the manga side of things. The manga market over the last 18 months has really just become stronger and stronger. It's a market that I've come to describe as healthy and crowded. We've watched the top books continue to sell extremely well, selling better now than they were a year ago, or perhaps even 6 months ago. But at the same time, we've seen so many books come into the market that there's now much more competition to get attention for those books. Nevertheless, I think that this is just the sign of a market that is maturing a bit, that is still showing signs of tremendous growth. We certainly see a lot of possibility with girls' books, with boys' books as well, and we're hoping in the future to be able to do books to carry those kids through to adulthood and actually have them continue to read manga as they get older.
Well, I'll actually speak to both anime and manga, and I think if you look at Cartoon Network, you'll look at Toonami, there's eight properties on there, five of them are his properties. If you look at Adult Swim, there's anime on there as well. So there's a lot of proliferation of anime on broadcast right now. And for us, the range is everything from Dekabunko Friends on Nickelodeon to Mega Man on Kids WB to the One Piece to the Naruto to Zatch Bell, on Cartoon Network. So it's a very diverse range of anime that is out there. We recently launched our Shonen Jump home video line, and we are announcing a Shoujo Beat home video line. So we do have some properties out there that are targeting the female audience as well. For the book side, the exciting news for us is that we last year had a milestone, the top 12 titles on BookScan were Viz Media titles at one point. And the interesting thing for us was that not only were there Shonen Jump titles on there, like Naruto, but there were also titles like a Hanakimi or a Hakimi. So we had a very diverse range of titles targeting very different demographics, everything from Shoujo to Shonen Jump. So it's really, it was very much a pleasure for us to see that there was a very wide range of titles on that list.
Mike, tell us about what your viewpoint is from Tokyopop.
I guess I would start out by echoing some of the comments that Dallas was making about competition in the marketplace. I think it's been a brutal year at retail in some respects because of the proliferation of titles, the availability of shelf space, the category perhaps not growing as rapidly as the number of titles that are being put out. All that being said, I think it's fair to say that it also continues to be an incredibly exciting category at retail. I think the sort of watershed event of 2005 is the maturation of, and I'll restrict my comments to manga as well, is the sort of maturation of manga and the internationalization of manga. I think what we're finding is that this is an art form which obviously has its sort of spiritual underpinnings in Japan. But we work with an increasingly wide variety of artists from all over the world, either in our international operations themselves or just over the internet. What's happening is a global revolution in manga. And I think kids are responding to this art form, to this aesthetic, in a very interesting way. And it's just been building very, very steadily over the past couple of years and really picked up a lot of steam in 2005.
Tell us a little bit, you obviously work with multiple publishers from Kodansha. Tell us a little bit about what your viewpoint is of the American market for manga in the last 12 to 18 months.
I'll speak mainly for the manga site because that's what I do. I think in the year preceding this year, from 2 years ago to 1 year ago, we really saw a very sudden increase in the number of titles being published. And we were a little bit concerned about that. We didn't know how the market would react to that. But we think that it's gone through that period, and things are really fine, and we're very happy that a lot of titles continue to be published. I think this past 12 to 18 months, what we've seen is that there has been an increase in the kind of books being published in the genres. So there are more titles being published, not just for the teenagers, but for slightly older audience and for slightly younger audience as well. So what we would really now like to try and see is the big question I think now for the Japanese publishers are asking themselves is whether this is going to reach the real journal reader. And so it was very interesting for me to listen to the previous panel about graphic novel publishing in general here in the United States, because that's something that we see from our side of things as well.
Right.
Because we do have our equivalent of, I think, people like Marjane Satrapi and Persepolis. But what we found is that people don't often choose to publish that from the manga side of things because of the current readership that we have. So we would like to try to expand that and explore a little bit more. I've also tried to see if some of the more classic titles, some of the older titles that we have in the library, if they may not find readers as well. That's what we'd like to try next.
At Center Park Media, we do both anime and manga. And I think what we can say is we've been doing anime for about 16 years. And the period from the time that we had to explain to people how to pronounce the word anime and tell them it wasn't an anime, to the time where it was a big market, maybe be 10, 12 years. That got collapsed in the case of manga to a much shorter period of time, maybe 3 or 4 years. So I think the success of anime laid the groundwork for an acceptance of manga in a much faster period of time, and that was a very good thing. And obviously we agree with everyone that says it's become a crowded market. You have a couple of trends taking place right now, a dichotomy between the TV-exposed titles and the non-TV-exposed titles, where the TV-exposed titles are much easier to get in stores and sell in large volume. So we're witnessing a real split in the market, I think, across those two kinds of titles. And then I think when you look at the industry point of view, you can also discern a movement into what we call two different business models. And Al would be one example of what we would call a brand management model, like a Funimation, in many cases, a Viz Media, where you have a business that is comprised of having a very popular title that's available on TV and books and films and merchandise, etc. It's a platform, if you will, for a supply of a large amount of programs to a wide and diverse mainstream audience. Then you have on the other end of the spectrum what we'd call a publishing model. That would be a company such as ours, where we obtain the rights to a program, be it a TV show or a manga, and our profit source comes from selling that guy by itself without a lot of externalities. So I think that you're going to see a continuation of those two trends among the industry players, which, you know, sort of business model do they gravitate towards. And on the retail shelves for both anime and manga, you're going to see that dichotomy between the top sellers and the lesser knowns. I think the market overall is going to continue to grow. There's going to be some bumpy times, like right now. I'm a big believer in that famous T-shirt that says, life's a bitch, and then you die. And that's just a temporary, I think, shaking out of the market as you find that there is a place for most of the stuff that's being released, but it's not going to be the same channels of distribution. And that's the challenge that's up to us, I think.
I think when you look at the trend of anime, you really have to go back about 5 years, back when the frenzy started. It was like the beast. We have to feed the beast and just keep pushing it out there until the appetite is satisfied. And I think over the last 12 months now, 18 months, it's been satisfied to a point and leveled out a little bit. Now you regroup, you look at it, figure out how do you grow it further without doing destruction to your competitors, to yourself, and to your retailers. But you know it is growing every year. I mean, we look at our anime network at 80 films, our cable channel, and it's up to 24 million homes now. And every time we go into a new market, we end up being one of the top performers on subscription VOD. And so we know it's growing. We know that every time we enter a market and we see that growth, it makes us feel good that we know it's got a long future ahead of it. We look at, like Lisa was saying, Cartoon Network, and these teens that are discovering anime now, I have two boys, 14, 11, they're looking at it, not only on Cartoon Network, but every other channel out there, and they're growing, and they're starting to get more money, and they want to buy stuff. And when they're gonna like it until their 30s, maybe for life. But the anime trend is really just it's one facet of a larger trend, and that's Japan. It's made its mark. Whether you look to Latin America, you look at Europe, everything from industrial design, fashion, and yes, anime. Anime has become ingrained to our cultural society, and everything in Japan now seems to be the popular thing, and it's really a part of what it means to be culturally literate in today's society, is to know about anime.
That was a great segue into the next topic, and when I assembled this panel, I really had one primary question that I wanted to ask them all and start a discussion on. And that is, to what degree is the phenomenon we're seeing right now with anime and manga part of a shift in the worldwide source for intellectual property from North America to Asia? And I think there's a couple parts of that. I think the first part of that I'd like to discuss is just the question that Mike started talking about, which is, to what degree is the current popularity of Japanese pop culture part of a larger trend? And I look at 100 years ago when culture was dominated by European sources, and then over the next decades, North America, specifically the United States, became the source of a lot of the world's intellectual property in terms of pop culture. The growth of Hollywood was the biggest part of that in terms of movies and television. Now we see Japanese animation and manga becoming very popular in the United States. Still small relative to the total size of the industries here, but it's a growing part, and it seems to be two facets. Those seem to be two facets of perhaps a broader trend. And so what I'd like to do, and I'm going to ask the panelists to jump in as they feel moved, but I'd like them to answer the question of whether they feel this is a long-term global trend, or is it something that's specific to North America and to these two markets that we're talking about today?
To start off, it's definitely as the world gets smaller because of technology. You no longer have to wait for the new trend. You know what it is. I mean, it spreads globally so quick. You don't have to wait. I mean, California starts the trend and it takes a year to make it over to across the United States. It's fast moving. And, well, I guess that's about all I really want to say.
I think we're definitely seeing what I call a cultural echo. If you look at the post-war world, it's fair to say that Hollywood, the U.S., drove a lot of popular culture, everything from music to movies to TV, etc., fashions. And what we're witnessing now is really the echoes. I mean, something like Blade Runner gets made as a movie. Japanese guys watch and say, wow, that's really cool, and then they start to turn it into manga, they turn it into anime. We see that and say, wow, Japanese anime is so cool, it's like really cutting edge. And then, you know, Peter Chung does something like Aeon Flux, which is sort of a mixture. It's like neither one nor the other. And then somebody sees that, and now we got Samurai Champloo. We're just witnessing a period where our culture went out for many decades, and it's just bouncing back. And it's bouncing back from a lot of different areas. Japan happens to be the one that got the most press, the most exposure over the last couple of years. But I think Japan's going to lead to an Asian boom in general. I think you're going to get a lot more out of Korea. I think in a couple of years, not soon, but in a couple of years, you're going to get more out of China and India, because these are places that are focusing very clearly on developing very vibrant industries because the governments want them to be strategic industries. So it's just really a matter of a long-term trend towards diversity overall. The new generation of kids in America, I think, are very receptive to outside influences and foreign influences in a way that previous generations weren't. So I'll put my money down, and it's a long-term trend, and it's going to not only involve Japan, but other Asian countries and you know, go around the world.
You know, I think initially when anime became aware to children, it had a big different, had a point of difference. And kids like newness, and kids like things that are different. And I think what's happening now, we like to say in our business, we like to eat our young. And I think what's happened, you're seeing a tremendous amount of, again, duplication of what the Japanese started. I also think, frankly, that if the stuff is not expurgated properly, when it comes out of Japan, it doesn't work here for younger children. And that's a big controversy, because there's a disconnect between manga and anime. Always has been, in the sense that the mangas are written for a much older audience, and the anime that we run with, say, my network, Fox, has to be driven to a seven-year-old. So we have to take out smoking, drinking, cursing, all the good stuff. You know, and we have to, in some cases, see the hate mail I get personally about how I am destroying single-handedly the anime universe. Well, obviously, we're in a business of trying to make a buck, and that if we can get 3 to 11-year-olds to go out and, as a call to action, to go out and purchase products surrounding these particular story arcs and support the play pattern of these story arcs evolve, we are obviously able to spend money promoting the actual vestige. So I think really what you're seeing is a point of difference that's come out of Japan initially, but that point of difference could come from any particular country. It happens that Japan had a tremendous library of manga that had never been exploited. I don't agree with some of the other countries will eventually be as strong. I think it'll be a function of whoever comes up with a good idea as opposed to a specific geographic region. I remember Ninja Turtles, which we do, came from two drunks in Massachusetts. You know, and so I think a lot of it, you know, I was reading the signs outside. There was a new show coming up called Kappa Mikey, right? Everybody heard about that? Guess what? It's our show, and it's a parody of Japanese anime. It looks like Japanese anime. It sounds like Japanese anime, but it was made in, like, New York City. So I think the concept is going to be point of difference and great ideas, and it may not matter where it ultimately comes from.
I guess I would say that there's sometimes a temptation, I think, to get a little bit, to over-intellectualize a little bit these questions of cultural influences and cross-pollination. I think ultimately it comes down to really great stories told in an incredibly compelling and unusual and innovative way. I've been around long enough to have seen a succession of waves of Japanese pop culture having been imported here, you know, back from, you know, late 60s, early 70s, and I think there was a tipping point in the early to mid 90s, mainly because of the internet and video games. The fact is that these kinds of stories are resonating with this particular generation all over the planet in a way that I think surprises a lot of us. I don't think it's something that's particularly mysterious at the end of the day. The stories themselves are just completely whacked out and very bizarre. The art captures a moment in time, you know, whether it's cyberpunk or whatever, that very much speaks to today's audience. And I think that the other thing that's beginning to happen is it's really an interesting gumbo of see all kinds of people who are inspired and have grown up with Japanese animation and manga who are beginning to produce their own versions of this aesthetic, you know, in Argentina or Europe or Malaysia or Canada. And those kids are producing some kick-ass shit, man. I mean, it's just, it's incredible how people are sort of assimilating this form that we've all grown to know and love the past decade and are producing new localized flavors of it that are really cool. So I think it is a long-term trend, but it becomes much more of a sort of a confused pedigree.
I'd like to actually take that idea one step further. I've given a lot of thought about whether or not manga and anime are a fad or whether it's going to go on for forever. I vote for forever. These kids, young adults, that are now just starting to experiment with the form all around the world, 5, 10, 15 years in Hollywood, they're actually going to be the people who are making the new films, who are making the new movies. And in the same way that we watched through the 60s and 70s as films were made from American superhero comics, but then watched in the 80s, 90s, and today as the people responsible for making those films were not viewing them simply as properties anymore, but something that they had grown up with and something that they were very passionate about. My own theory is that as the years go on, these kids are going to grow up, they're going to take this passion to Hollywood, and they're going to make television and film, which in turn is going to feed back into more interest in anime and manga, and it's just going to keep growing.
There is a lot of interest right now from Hollywood. James Cameron is doing the Battle Angel Alita film. But I think there's some very good points up here. There is a little bit of a disconnect between the anime and the manga, and I think a lot of it is just educating people out there. I know for Viz, we've done a lot of, we made a lot of progress out there. We have a 80-city museum tour that's called Jump to Japan. It basically demystifies anime and manga for kids. We work very closely with Reading is Fundamental. We work very closely with newspapers and education. You know, and a lot of it is explaining that manga is not, you know, it's not this violent, there's not that perception out there that it's scary and foreign, that it is a very common, form of reading. So I think it's just a matter of educating the, everybody out there.
Yeah, everyone said pretty much what I was going to say, so I agree. It's a long-term trend. I'd just like to point out two things that haven't been mentioned, and one is that this growth in the manga and anime industry in the United States has come relatively late in the world. It's been there for a very long time in Asia, where it's much, much more accepted in general, and I think it's more advanced in Europe as well. And so, relatively speaking, there's a lot more that out there and for people to discover. The other thing is that this refers to graphic novels in general. So I did a quick calculation based on what Milton said. And I think, so graphic novels, including periodicals in the United States, currently represents under 2% of book publishing in the United States. In Japan, it's close to a third. It's about 30%. That includes the magazines, the anthologies. So you can't compare straight because the industry is different. In Japan, the book publishers publish the magazines themselves. The kiosk distribution is counted as being part of publishing. But so you can just see how gender it can get as a medium.
Okay, we're going to do sort of one more broad question as panelists to comment, and then we're going to open it up to questions. And that question, a couple of people touched on in the last go-around with discussions of Tokyo Pop's original English language manga and Kappa Mikey, which is a U.S.-produced program that looks at anime and uses anime as subject matter. And I guess the question is, recently there has been a fair amount of American production of both anime and manga-style products or intellectual property. And I guess the question is, obviously at some level it's competition. Everybody's competing for the same eyeballs, the same dollars. But where do you think this is going as a panel? Is this sort of an endorsement of the form and simply part of, I think, the cultural echoes that John talked about earlier? Or is it something that ultimately will co-opt the trend of adoption of Japanese pop culture and Americanize it or turn it into a world culture that which the original Japanese source material is only a part. So I'd like to hear the panelists.
get a better handle on the question, Milton. Are you asking whether we think the native-born spin-off like OEL and Comic Mikey, et cetera, will end up taking a larger role than the original anime and manga told?
Yes.
Oh. That's an interesting question. I don't have a clue, but I'm happy to opine. And I think, no, right? And the very simple reason is I think that it'll be the other way around. I think that the original stuff, especially in the era of manga, will be a subset of the larger manga for probably at least 5 or 10 years, probably for as long as it takes for the current generation of kids who are 10 and 12 to grow up to be writers themselves. So I don't see manga, original English manga, taking over in the short term, but I do see a possibility for a generational change. And in the case of anime, I think that there's a much higher percentage probability that the localized stuff will take a bigger share, and that will be more a function, not necessarily of the individual programming, but of the sophistication of the companies behind it. I'll take Al's company as an example of a superlative brand management company. I mean, these guys can take a thing, a program, get it worldwide, distributed throughout any number of products, et cetera, and that's a very specific skill that's hard for a lot of companies to get. So I think it'll happen faster with the anime, the TV-based stuff, than the manga. So that's my opinion.
Thanks very much. Well, how do I say this without becoming... I think that the... right now, that the trend that I believe is going to happen, and if you look at the next 5 or 6 years, because we're seeing it from the Japanese anime companies, they're looking for co-production partners. They're looking for people who will help them localize a show in its inception and create something that has a much more global reach coming out of the market. One of the issues that happens in Japan sometimes is that you get a show that has a lot of Japanese culture built into it, and that culture is hard to translate in France, in Italy, in Spain, in Germany. So what we're seeing now, and especially with the animators, Toei especially, where we have a number of joint ventures, we're developing new shows, one of them called Chaotic, for instance, which will be coming out worldwide in September, which is being produced and written in Japan. But the pre and post was done in the U.S., as opposed to the usually when the pre and post is done in Japan, they do the animation, we get it, we do the post. Now we're doing the pre and post, and we're using them to add the sensibility, the spin, the look. But the story arc, or the idea, is our idea, and it's being done in conjunction with other Japanese companies. So I think that's going to be a process. Every Japanese company I know of is looking for joint venture partners to do that. The second part will be, I think, will be complete co-productions where even the intellectual property is co-owned, which is a totally foreign Japanese concept. They don't want to give you any copyright. Yet all the projects we're currently involved with are co-copyright holders. We will own them in perpetuity. We won't go through another Pokemon experience. And, you know, we will end up working more collaboratively with the Japanese to create something that can spin out for a long time. My manga comment is, I think manga is a problem. It's a problem because we're in a culture that is not a reading culture. The kids today don't read. They read less today. Every survey, they're watching more television, they're on the internet more, and that content, although being king, is very disposable. Because the way content gets put out now, it's going to be put out free. More and more content will be available for free. You go to the internet, you'll be able to download as many, but we're streaming most of our shows. The reason why we're streaming them, we want kids to watch them as much as they can so they get vested in the concept and go out and buy products. The products ain't free. The content is going to be free. And manga, in my mind, is trying to put a square peg into a round hole in the United States. It will never be a big deal here for kids that are into the computer or the internet generation, because they're not going to read. They haven't read. It's not going to start now.
Well, that's a pretty damning viewpoint.
Say what you think. Don't hold back. Come on.
We are working with Reading is Fundamental, Newspapers and Education. We are doing a pretty extensive literacy campaign. You know, Reading is Fundamental came to us because they do recognize that the kids, are losing kids to TV shows, they are losing kids to computer games, and this is a great medium to bring them back into reading. So, yeah, although I do agree that kids don't read as much as they should, I think that if anything, this is the one medium that could bring that back. Librarians support us. Thank you, Catherine Heider. librarians are seeing that this is a category that's moving, and you know, I don't have quite as, I guess, damning of an impression of kids in America.
No, I think, Catherine, what I'm suggesting is the way they read. I think to play a very significant trading card game, reading becomes a very significant method of having them play. I think where they're going to get their material is going to be electronic. It's not going to be printed. I think that's the point of difference that we're talking about. That the medium is going to be through electronic devices. That's where they're going to spend most of their time. It doesn't mean they won't read specifically, but unlike the Japanese model, where you go on a subway train, everybody's carrying a 3,000-page manga, and in the United States, they're carrying an MP3 player, they're carrying an iPod, they're carrying things that where they're going to get material, but it's going to be digital and it's going to be electronic. That's why my company's position is to be the leading distributor of digital entertainment. I don't care about printing stuff at all.
That's the way the librarians are not to agree different way. So
how much of your library now is on not on books? And eventually you can read the next government just wants a new archival service, but every one of their records on some kind of digital composition.
We're going to see if any of the panelists want to weigh in on this topic, and then we'll go to the
I don't want to weigh in on the future of literacy in America question. I'm frankly not qualified to comment on that. But what I am qualified to comment on is the fact that this discussion of the influence of what's come to be known as OEL, Original English Language Manga, and what its ultimate influence will be on this marketplace, that's already occurred. That's in the past. This is a fact. Bestsellers, book scan bestsellers, are being produced by kids in Detroit and Ohio and Italy and France. That particular horse has left its mark. The question, of course, is how quickly those kinds of books, the Socorro refugees, the Dramacons, the missing guests of the world, begin to approach in terms of their market potential. Some of the more traditional localized Japanese manga that currently dominate the charts. But that's just a matter of time. I mean, it's kind of like, I like to think of it as the difference between the rock and roll generation and the hip-hop generation. Rock and roll is more of a kind of a straight, literal localization of material from Japan into the U.S. That was a paradigm that was incredibly successful and, in fact, created this industry and the reason we're all in this room. But that's not what kids are about anymore. This is hip-hop. This is fucking it up. This is mixing things up. This is taking a lot of different influences from cultures all over the world and making it your own, kind of deciding that, I've been reading, Naruto since I was 11, and you know what? The first manga that sells a million copies in a single volume is not going to be from Japan in the United States. It's not going to be from Korea. It's going to be from some kid who right now has been reading Japanese manga all his or her life, and has been inspired to do something incredible in their workshop in Topeka, Kansas. That's going to be the kind of story, that's going to be the aesthetic, that's going to be the style that people in this country are going to pick up and read to the tune of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of copies. So, again, it's obviously I have a vested interest given our commitment to this initiative, but the fact is that the manga publishing world in the United States has changed, and kids have taken it over. kids are drawing this stuff, they're writing this stuff, and they're making it happen.
Yeah, it's true that when you read manga, you want to write it. I mean, it's true of kids in Japan, and every single Japanese person, my generation will remember at least one kid in class was really good at it, and it was really cool. And out of all those millions of kids, maybe 10 will make it to be published, and maybe out of 100 will make it to be a bestseller. I mean, that's how it works, so I think it's a natural phenomenon. About digitalizing manga, everyone in Japan has tried it. We've tried it online, we've tried it on mobiles. But we haven't actually quite worked out the format which really works on the screen. So I think there is a possibility that all this will develop into something entirely new that you can't call manga or graphic novel. But until that happens, I think paper will be the main medium for manga. So that's it.
Anybody else?
It's also a question of scale, I think. In the book publishing business, as we all know, if a book sells over 100,000 copies, it's a big success. I mean, there's a tendency to look at book publishing, see the Dan Browns and the Harry Potters out there, and see, wow, 8, 10 million copies. But you have to realize that that's actually a very, very small percentage of publishing. So in manga, I mean, just about every publisher has a book that will sell in the neighborhood of 75 to 100,000 copies per volume, which is very, very successful, and I still think there's a lot of room for growth there. I think it's a question of scale. You know, are we, as Del Rey, as a publisher, are we tapped into the sales of the toys that come later, or the sales of the show if it's on television? No, I mean, we have a vested interest in how well that does, of course. But ultimately, at the end of the day, manga and books... Manga within the realm of books in the United States is a very successful category that's really just getting bigger.
I'd just like to say to Al, hey, thanks. We've got enough competitors already in manga. Stay the heck out, man. Thank you.
And I think it's important just to, and again, it sounds like I'm anti, I love manga from a visual and from a story arc standpoint, but I'm also a realist to suggest that 5 years from now, you won't even know what a television network is. You won't even know what the internet is. They're going to be so absorbed together in one little box that's going to trigger a myriad of different locations. And it's going to eat content like it's going out of style. And the only question I have is, don't get left behind on the ship. You better have a strategy that takes advantage of all of that. That's all I'm trying to ascertain.
Okay, we're going to open it up for questions. I think we have enough material to work on. Yes, please.
Well, I don't think you're going to run out of new ideas. Just as you put, in Japan, there's a plethora of topics and themes and stuff that would not even be conceivable to Americans. I used to work for Sony. Sony uses manga to teach statistical mathematical techniques for quality control. That means quality control management. The city of Tokyo uses manga to teach their sewer construction people how to estimate the cost of sewage. Anybody back in the Vietnam days remembers when the American Army had to make comic books to teach the GIs how to clean their M16s because they couldn't count on them being literate when we had a conscript army. So I think that, yes, you will see an attempt by publishers to bring out lots of different things as a pure result of the competitive urge. For example, how many of you are familiar with the yaoi phenomenon? Okay. Two or three years ago, you couldn't even talk about yaoi without people being totally perplexed, Now, and I hand this to the guys who are putting on the New York Comic Con, Brokeback Manga. What a great way to explain. What a great way to explain what yaoi is, okay? Now, that is something that, a company like our company will jump into very quickly because we're one of the smaller independents. I don't have the luxury of, Naruto. I don't have the luxury of the best-selling comic book of all time in Japan because those come from big companies and we're independents. So you'll see people who will try different things. Half of them won't work and half will work, but you're going to see people trying to bring out the manga from Japan, for example, that have to do with the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. You know, I mean, things like that. Warren Buffett is doing a thing with Deke now on TV to teach kids how to, you know, be better financial managers, okay? So you're going to feel a demand from, you're going to feel a push from the publishers to cover every possible genre just as a pure competitive way to get over with, you know, with the other people, I would think. What are you doing over at Tokyo Pop in that regard?
In terms of Ropak manga?
Exploring all kinds of new genres.
I think it's a question of partly of the maturation of the audience. I think that the audience in the United States for manga, in particular, has classically been a teenage audience. And as those kids grow up, some of them will peel off and no longer be into it. But Tsuka-san was alluding earlier to the fact that there's an incredible variety of manga written and produced in Japan that hasn't even really had its day here yet, because it's either too young or more classically too old in terms of its subject matter. So I think it's a matter of kids kind of growing into their adulthoods here, being interested in continuing to experience manga as a form of entertainment, and therefore, you know, things like Blackjack Yoroshiku, things like Moyoko Ano's books, these books that appeal to an older crowd, I think are going to start to do better. Frankly, they don't sell as well as Fruits Basket or Naruto right now. And but I think that day is coming. It's just a little early in the process.
For Viz, this is our 20th anniversary. We've been around for 20 years, and I know a lot of people probably don't know that. But we have a signature line, a signature imprint. I know we're probably best known for Naruto and a lot of the mass market properties. But we have Phoenix, we have Vagabond, we have Monster coming out from Naoki Urasawa. So we are catering to that older, more mature audience, and we are hoping that the kids that are doing the mass market titles now, they will grow and they will start reading Monster. They will start rediscovering the Phoenix and the Vagabonds out there.
I think as manga publishers, actually, we have a responsibility to publish that kind of work. Because, again, as these kids get older, what we don't want to do is to create an environment where everything becomes self-referential. There's a tendency, I think, outside of the people in this room and outside of our industry to view manga as if it were a genre, when we all know that it is, of course, a multitude of genres and a multitude of styles. I think we as publishers have a responsibility to introduce readers in America to new and different styles. Some will work and some won't, but I think we have to keep trying different things to keep the market fresh.
In the back.
Do you think that there's an expanding market for kind of the nostalgia-based, those of us that grew up with Johnny Quest and Speed Racer and all, and now you're seeing kind of the C-Lab 2021 and Harvey Birdman and Boondocks that kind of go back into that, but with kind of a more cynical eye. But we were out there and we grew up with these kind of Americanized anime and all, and now we're going back and doing that. Do you think that there's kind of a growing market for that kind of nostalgia base?
Sort of a generational question. What are the people that grew up on anime 20 years ago, or as the hobby was first developing, they're watching now?
Anybody ever hear of Pope novels? ever studied those? We studied those ad nauseum, and I want to tell you three things we found which were kind of funny. Well, first of all, there was something called The Bat, which was written in the 20s, and I can't imagine that Batman today didn't read that in particular little piece of work. There was something called The Spider, which I guess Spider-Man might have had something to forefront from that. And my most egregious one is Doc Savage. Now, Doc Savage, the Man of Bronze, my goodness, Man of Steel, Doc Savage lived in the Fortress of Solitude. Do you know who wrote Doc Savage? Clark and Kent. I mean, it's like, yike. So I think the answer is that certainly we are what we eat. We get exposed to things, we remember them, and sometimes we take ownership of them, even though we didn't create them. And I think that's what's going to happen going forward. You're going to see some things coming back in different style, but with the story arcs are going to be, or the subject matter is going to be somewhat familiar.
I think one of the things that's really challenging in answer to your question about what I kind of refer to this is will retro sell? And in fact, in manga right now, retro does not sell. Manga is such a teen-based phenomenon in the American marketplace that art that isn't viewed as being incredibly contemporary, incredibly cutting edge, even though the books are fabulous. I mean, I think some of the stuff that Viz has done historically, in the pulp line or in the signature line that Lisa was referring to has been great stuff. Dallas, I think, made very eloquent comments about what our responsibilities are in terms of bringing the right kind of a broad diversity of material to the marketplace. The fact of the matter is, though, it's extremely commercially challenging right now to do stuff that doesn't look incredibly modern. It's just part of what's happening in manga right now.
Just one last word. The retro stuff does really well in Japan because it's been around so long. But it just hasn't. I don't think it'll happen very soon here.
Just wait.
It's like Astro Boy.
I just wish I could see.
Okay, next question. Yes.
Disagree with that. I think that's a very good discussion or characterization of what I call kind of the history of otaku-dom in this country. I think that there was a period of time in which that was incredibly important to the development of this community. And I think the ability to I remember what was the woman's name at Viz that started jailed and she got like lambasted several years ago. There was actually an aesthetic, a sensibility that developed in which it was a badge of honor to be able to adhere to certain questions of verisimilitude and authenticity and it was a cool in thing and I think all of that was great. But you know what? People don't really care that much about that anymore. People care about quality and they care about the immediacy of the stories. And I think if OEL is crap, it's not going to sell. And the fact is that people will ignore it. On the other hand, if it somehow manages to capture that essential kind of rebel spirit that we all love about manga and anime and reinterprets it in a new and fresh way, it's gonna be very successful. Oh, sure. I love Japanese manga. It's just that manga is produced all over the world and will continue to become a much more global phenomenon. It's a fact. It's no longer a question of another analogy I sometimes use is the origin of jazz. Jazz, of course, began as an incredibly American indigenous art form with various kinds of influences, but it appears all over the world now in incredibly compelling and interesting ways.
I want to jump in on this one. I love this one. I love this one because I think you're unfortunately incorrect. And I tell you, I can show you research. We do tremendous amounts of research with kids on a worldwide basis. And we have a new deal now with Microsoft, which we're introducing new stuff with Microsoft that'll come out in September. And boy, it certainly looks a lot like manga to me, but it ain't. And it was based on a lot of focus groups and a lot of, not that I believe in focus groups from the standpoint of testing ideas, but one of the questions we ask kids, where's this stuff come from? And not one kid says Japan. Not one kid. Pokemon. We're showing Pokemon. They have slanty eyes. They're eating rice. They think this comes from the United States. They have no clue where it comes from. It's like if you ask a kid who makes G.I. Joe, they wouldn't know it's Hasbro. And they don't care. So it's really not a question. I'm talking now, 3 to 8-year-olds, 3 to 11-year-olds. They really don't know where the stuff emanates. So I think the cultural pull is really a function of what the Japanese people and companies would like to see. And they try and play out that particular cultural pull. But the point, in fact, is the more culture you put into these things, the less global they can be in terms of cultural iconic positions. You can't make kids who've never seen a certain Japanese tea ceremony get into it. It's not part of their vernacular. So I think the game is to take the best of what Japan has to offer, which is tremendous writing skills, tremendous animation skills in terms of visualizing a concept, and then mold it so that it could be accepted by the broadest range of people on a worldwide basis.
Well,
I think the one point I would agree on, it is about storyline and it is about content. I mean, we obviously have a very different opinion between what Tokyopop and Viz publishes. But the one thing I will point out is that, you know, at one point Fullmetal Alchemist outsold Star Wars on BookScan. Naruto, you know, outsold a lot of the Frank Miller titles. So I do think that there still is that remnant of coolness, you know, that Japan, you know, that factor out there. And, you know, I mean, the fact that both of our manga properties basically was a different reading format.
I have a theory about why manga sells well, because we get asked this a lot. Why do kids read manga? One possible reason is because it's foreign. I don't think that's it. I actually think it's the sincerity of manga. The complete lack of cynicism in Japanese manga. In American graphic novel, and in so much of American media, there is such a cynical look at the world and at life. Japanese manga, and of course, this is a very broad statement, there are of course exceptions to it, but in Japanese manga, the characters are very true. They're very sincere. They're very sincere in their emotions and how they express themselves. I think that appeals straight to teenagers. I think that goes straight to what teenagers like to read.
Question is manga for 6 to 9 year olds.
I definitely think there's an audience out there. We have a lot of titles that are geared towards that. We rate them A for all ages. You know, again, we have a museum exhibit going out there, a children's museum called Jump to Japan, and it demystifies manga, all the literacy campaigns that we have out there. You know, I think part of the challenge is growing, you know, the younger audience and having them accept that manga is just another reading form. It's not something that is geared 100% towards teenagers.
I don't think the challenge is just in reaching the kids, though. I think the challenge is in reaching the parents. That's why manga does so well with teenagers, because they can buy it themselves. A kid, you know, a 4 or 5 year old, even if they want a manga, it's going to be harder for them to explain to their parents why they want this book. So I think that there are things we can do to release the appropriate books to tie into anime. But I honestly think that as the current generation of readers grows up, they're going to be used to this. They're going to understand what it is, and they're going to buy it for their children in the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay, we have time for maybe 2 more questions. Oh, wait, which PW person should I ask? I guess seniority, Calvin gets the call on that one.
I think with yaoi, there's probably a couple of reasons why you haven't had like a Midwest, you know, evangelical American kind of red state reaction, and that's simply because they haven't heard about it yet. Do you realize how hard it is to communicate anything to the mass market in America? You know, most Americans, you know, I'm serious, it may sound weird, you know, in this room, but most people don't know what manga is. I'm from Ohio, and, you know, I go back every once in a while just to sort of refamiliarize myself with America, you know. Living in New York City is like, you know, you sort of have a different point of view about a lot of issues. And I think that it just hasn't hit the popular culture, the awareness that this stuff is out there. And when it does hit, there's going to be a certain amount of, I hate to say fabricated or made-up controversy, but the same kind of controversy that you see right now in the Middle East with the Mohammed cartoons from Denmark. Most people, I don't think really care much, but the moment that their governments get them together for political reasons and say we're going to have demonstrations and burn down embassies, etc., because they've insulted your national honor and your religious honor, etc., it becomes a different level of dialogue. So I think that the key to the publishers here is speak to your market. In other words, our line at CPM is called Be Beautiful. Everything is very clearly packaged and labeled. It's labeled for 18 and older, even if the content is acceptable for the younger kids, which most of it is. We just make that a rule that everything goes out as an 18+. It goes out shrink-wrapped because we don't want anybody to be surprised or pick it up by mistake. We want to be able to protect ourselves from claims that we're pitching as two kids, you know, so we rate them and we put the things on it. I think a certain amount of responsibility in that form will be called upon so that when, you know, the whatever those groups are that picket, you know, TV shows because they have, you know, people living in the same apartment together, you know, without being married, you know, that when that comes, we just have to be able to respond to it in an appropriate manner by saying we're acting with ratings, we're acting with warnings, we're acting with proper packaging. And if you do that, there probably won't be a big backlash, but I could be totally wrong.
I actually have a hope about it, because I think it's coming. I think there's going to be a backlash, and there's probably somebody in Kansas that's working up the lawsuit right now.
In Arkansas.
But maybe in Arkansas. I think the one reason for hope that I have is it's going to be really confusing to people to understand what Yowie is, but it's going to be even more confusing to them that girls read. You know, so that's what I hope it becomes completely confused.
Okay. Yes, the women there, please.
But again, I think it's a function of those people don't know what you're doing. The slash audience tends to be limited in nature. You know, you don't have the Letterman show talking about slash fiction. You don't have Jay Leno making jokes about it. You don't have it, you know, on, you know, daily TV. I mean, it's just, you know, the people who are interested in it know where to go, know where to find it. I don't want to call them otakus, but in a sense, they're, you know, slash fiction otakus. They live in their own world, and people are either part of it or not. And if they're not, you really don't contact it. I mean, think about, just today, did any of you contact anything vis-a-vis Yowie outside this room? No, you're not going to see it on a bus ad, you're not going to see it on a TV ad, you're not going to hear the people talking about it on the radio. So part of it is just, it's in its own little world, and if it stays there, those who may be offended won't know about it and won't find it worth their while. It's only when it goes truly mainstream and people sense it's being forced down their throats. So maybe when the librarians start putting in libraries, that's when we're going to have an issue, right?
Okay.
And what kind of conclusions did he come to?
Okay.
Is there a geographical issue here, like, you know, big cities take it better than the boonies?
Lots of basketball.
Okay, keep it up.
I hate to say it, but we're going to call this panel to a close. Really appreciate everybody bringing their views. Let's give them